Good morning, everybody. It's good to see you. It's good to be here in the house of the Lord this morning. I'm so thankful for the privilege that we have of meeting together and worshiping the Lord one with another. One of the consistent things about my prayer life is that usually starting on Sunday night, I start praying that the Lord will give me a message for the next time I stand before the Lord's children, whatever time that may be, whether it's a week away or a day away or a month away, that the Lord would give me a message. And so often when I do that, not all of the time, but many times when I do that, even in the middle of that prayer, almost immediately when I utter those words in my mind, a certain scripture, a certain thought will come to me. Well, that's happened to us this week, and I trust it's of the Lord, and we'll try to speak a few things upon it. The thing that came upon our mind this week was a passage found in Joshua chapter 24 and verse 15. This particular verse contains a couple of phrases that are very common to you that I'm certain that you've heard. There's two different phrases in here that I see quite a bit. One of them I see used and out in the denominational world very much, and the other one I see on signs that you can buy in a store all the time. Now, the first one is, if you look here in Joshua chapter 24, and if it, verse 15, it says, "And if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord," then here's a part that I hear out in the world a lot, "choose you this day whom you will serve." And I hear that used a lot by a number of people, that it's your decision. You have a choice in this world if you're going to serve God or not. You have a choice whether to be saved or not, is what a lot of people use that as of. Now, I'm going to show here in a minute, Lord willing, by the scriptures, that that's not what he was talking about. Now, the other part of it, the part that I see in signs a lot, the very bottom of this verse, where it said, the very last phrase says, "But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." Now, I want us to get a proper context of this verse this morning. And to do that, I want to go all the way back to the book of Deuteronomy. Now, that's not really all that far back. It's just a prior book. But if you go back to the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 34, the very last chapter of Deuteronomy, here Moses, this is Moses' farewell speech to the nation of Israel. Moses, and he was just an amazing person. Moses was used greatly by God. And we all know the stories about how that Moses had grown up in Pharaoh's household. There in the king's house, every luxury that could have been had was available to him. I mean, he was blessed with it. He had the best education. He had all the great opportunities. If anybody had the opportunity to get spoiled, it was him. I mean, just life of luxury. And by faith, Moses forsook that. And he went to be with his own people. And God mightily used him. And we're very familiar of all those accounts about how Moses was used of God, those 10 plagues that came upon the nation of Israel. How that Moses then went in and spake unto the Pharaoh, and then at the last, the Pharaoh finally, after all these 10 plagues, finally heeded unto Moses' plea, "Let my people go." And so Moses led that group of people out of bondage, out of Egypt. 600,000 men, probably 2 million people all together. And Moses led that great congregation out of bondage. And we all know the story about how they came to the Red Sea. And they came to the Red Sea, and Moses says, "Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord." And as those waters of the Red Sea went as a wall on either side, and the children of Israel, by faith, went through the Red Sea, Moses leading the way. And then they came, after 40 years of wandering in the wilderness, they came to the Promised Land. And we know, and we could take a lot of time looking at this history about all of this morning, the biblical history. But as they came to the shores of the Jordan River, after those years of wandering in the wilderness, fighting battles along the way, and it came time for Moses to die. And it said here in Deuteronomy chapter 34 that here in verse 4 it says, the Lord said unto him, here Moses was up on Mount Nebo. And he said, this is the land. Here Moses on Mount Nebo, look out over the promised land. And he said, this is the land which I swear unto Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob, and I will give it unto thy seed. I have caused thee to see it with thine eyes, but thou shalt not go over thither. So Moses got to see the promised land, but the Lord didn't allow him to go over the river and into the promised land. And we read in other occasions where Moses, with all the greatness he had, he wasn't perfect. And there was a time came when the children of Israel murmured, and the Lord told him to go speak to the rock. He smote it, took the crest, and said to the people, must I fetch you again water out of this rock? And he took the glory of Lord's miracles and power for himself. And the Lord said, because this you'll not go over. And so we see here that Moses died. Here in verse 5, he lied land in the Moab. And it says he buried him in a valley, the land of Moab. No man knoweth his sepulcher unto this day. The Lord buried him there. And I find this amazing in verse 7. Moses was 120 years old when he died. Now that's not the amazing part. The amazing part was that his eye was not dim. You know, I don't know about you, but I had to wear these when I was 40. I didn't get to wait till 120 and still have good eyesight. Moses had that good eyesight at age 120, his natural strength. You know, I'm not 60 yet, and I'm already beginning to feel old. You know, I can't do near what I used to. I get tired or quick. I can't lift. I can't do all of those things I used to do when I was a young man. But here Moses was 120 and still had that natural strength. Now, can you imagine when word came to the nation of Israel, Moses is dead. He's no longer here. And they mourned him 30 days. And it gets to a point where saying, he was such a great person, a great leader. God's definitely hand was on him. What are we going to do now? Can you sense some despair? And perhaps you've seen that in your own lives. When perhaps a parent, a grandparent, perhaps you even felt that in this church a number of years ago when Brother George passed away. What are we going to do now? A strong leader has gone. But what we need to remember, that before Moses died, God knew what was going to happen. And God had provided the way. And the Lord does that in our lives too, as life continues on. It says here in Deuteronomy chapter 34, verse 9, and Joshua, the son of Nun, was full of the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hands upon him, and the children of Israel hearkened unto him and did as the Lord commanded to Moses. Now here was this great man, Moses, that it says there in verse 10 that never a man was like that, leading the prophets in the nation of Israel. So here was this great man, but the Lord had already prepared Joshua to take over and take his place. And we see, and I'm not going to spend the time going into all the details, but we see how that had Joshua took over the leadership of Israel, of that nation there. The Lord spoke unto Joshua and told him to, gave him the instructions for leading the people across the Jordan River. And I love that account of crossing the Jordan River, how that there came out of the all the tribes of people as they began to step across into that river, the Jordan River, that was overflowing the banks at that time, that when they set their foot down, that the water stood up as a heap. Now, the raising of the waters of the Red Sea, you know, and those walls on either side, I would have liked to have been there. I would have liked to have seen that. That would have been amazing to see. But I'd also like to have seen the crossing of the Jordan River when those waters stacked up as a heap They just quit running. They just started stacking up. And the river downstream went dry. The lakes down there, you know, they run out of water. And it stayed that way, and the children of Israel went across the Jordan River. Now, they took up stones, one from each tribe, as they crossed that river and put them as a memorial there so they'd never forget that. But here, as they went across the Jordan River, and with Joshua leading them, they conquered Jericho. And you remember how severe and how much fighting was endured and how many lives were lost as they fought that battle of Jericho. Y'all remember reading that? Neither do I. I mean, the Lord blessed them, and those walls fell down. They walked around those walls 7 days. 7 days went around seven, blew the trumpet, the walls fell down flat. Now, I've heard it preached, and it does enable a little bit of a merit that, you know, I always had in my mind, you know, when those walls fell in, that, you know, all the Israelites, they had to run over all the rubble and all the stones to get to all the people to kill them and all that. I've heard one man preach that those walls just sunk into the ground. They fell into the ground, into nothing, so they could went straight across. Well, we know they fell down, and how they did it, I don't know. But Joshua led the people. And as they went into the promised land under the hand of Joshua, there were battles to fight, but God was with them. And we need to remember that even though God is with you in a mighty way, you're still going to have battles to fight. And even though God is with you and you know you're going to win the battle, you might lose a little battle every once in a while. Remember Ai? The battle after Jericho? The children of Israel lost that one. They had to go again. And the second time, they remembered to do it God's way. And it worked out a whole awful lot better to do it God's way. But then, and here's the point I want to get to. Now as we get back to Joshua chapter 24, the children of Israel under Joshua's leadership had fought battle after battle. They conquered all of that land, the promised land. The land had been allotted to all of the tribes, all of the 12 tribes. And now Joshua's time for him to die was near. And just as Moses had done in Deuteronomy in giving the children of Israel a farewell speech, Joshua calls Israel together here at the end of his time as general of the army and leading the army into victorious battle. Oh, and by the way, that battle was victorious, but the enemy was still around. The enemy was still present. They still had battles to fight. They still had to keep the enemy out. But the land had been inhabited. They had taken over the land. And so here in Joshua 24, Joshua calls the people together. It says in verse 1, Joshua gathered all the tribes of Israel to Shechem and called for the elders of Israel and for their heads and for their judges and their officers, and they presented themselves before God. Now, what Joshua's going to get into, he's going to do it real quick, and in the interest of time, I'm not going to go through all of this chapter, but he's going to give them a quick summary of what God has done for the nation of Israel. He's going to say, I called Abraham. God said, I called Abraham out of his land, called him in to the promised land and the Canaan's land. I gave him Isaac. He goes through all of those. He says, verse 6, I brought your fathers out of Egypt. You came to the sea. Then he tells about crying to the Egyptians, crossing the Red Sea. That's verse 7. Verse 8, he says, I brought you in the land of the Amorites. And he talks about some of the other battles that they had. And I really like verse 12. That brings something that we forget. And in verse 12, the Lord said, I sent the hornet before you and drave them out before you, even the two kings of the Amorites, but not with thy sword nor with thy bow. Now, have you ever heard of anybody winning a battle by hornets? That's not a normal battle tactic. Now, some commentators have said that what this really means is that this is a figurative language, that the hornets mean that was the fear that God put into them. I've read other commentators that said when it says hornets, that it really means hornets. And there's a little bit of secular history, I'm told. I haven't read it. Perhaps Brother Don or Brother Kenny have, that there were at that time in secular history about hornets chasing armies. Well, I don't know if it happened then. That would work if I was in the army. I would definitely run. But the Lord said, I use hornets. Now, whether that was figure or literal, I lean toward the literal side. The Lord used those hornets. Now, then notice what the Lord said in verse 13. What the Lord has done for these people, for the nation of Israel. He said, for I have given you a land which you did not labor, and cities that you built not, and you dwell in them, and of the vineyards and of the olives which ye planted not, ye do eat. So he gave them this land. They didn't have to work for it. He gave them cities and houses to live in that they didn't build. They were eating of the crops and of the vineyards of trees and plants that they did not sow into the ground. Now that's a great blessing, isn't it? And you know why they had all of that? Because of God. Because of God's blessings upon them. Now, as a result of that, as a result of this quick review of the history of Israel, from the time of Abraham, the crossing of the Red Sea, the time in the wilderness, and now the possession of the promised land, they can clearly see, and Joshua's reminding them of this, they can clearly see God's blessings upon them, that whatever they have is because of God. And so he says in verse 14, now therefore fear the Lord. Now that's pretty good admonition for us today, isn't it? Now that's not a choice. It doesn't sound like a choice, does it? You don't have an option. It says fear the Lord. And notice what else is commanded. Now fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and in truth. Now that's a command, isn't it? Now why is he commanding them? He's telling those people this because look what God has done for you. Because God has done for this, you need to serve him. You need to remember all of these things. And then in verse 15, that verse we hear so often, and if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose this day whom you will serve, whether gods your father served, other side of the flood, or the gods of the Amorites. What Joshua is saying, I'm commanding you to serve the Lord. And it says, if it seem evil, what it's saying, if you want to forsake the Lord, I think the gist of this verse is, if you're going to forsake the Lord, it don't matter what God you serve. Whether the God of the other side your father served or the God of the Amorite, don't make any difference. If you ain't going to serve the Lord, it don't make any difference. Instead of saying evil to serve the Lord, you're in trouble, is what he's saying. I don't see this really as a choice. He's already commanded them, serve the Lord in sincerity. Don't forsake the Lord. And then he said, as for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. Now, I want us to notice one thing. In verse 19, he drops down and he says, after he made mention of a few other things here about what God had done for him, then he said to the people, you cannot serve the Lord. Isn't that amazing? He first commanded them to serve the Lord. Then he says, If you forsake the Lord, it don't matter what you do, it's going to be wrong, basically what he was saying. And now he's saying you cannot serve the Lord. And what is he saying that for? He says you cannot serve the Lord, for he is a holy God, he is a jealous God, and he will not forgive your transgressions nor your sins. And if you forsake the Lord and serve strange gods, then he will turn and do you hurt and consume you after he hath done you good. Now, there's a reason Joshua said that. When he was starting that, he said, you cannot serve the Lord. What he was saying is, if you serve the Lord, you need to do it with sincerity. And in how he said up there, in sincerity and in truth, and put away these gods. Said, if you turn from, what he was saying by this, if you turn from the Lord, you're going to suffer. If you're not serving the Lord in sincerity and in truth, you're going to suffer. That's what he's telling them. And you know what the people said? Nay, but we will serve the Lord. Now, Joshua made a covenant with them that day. I think he made this statement here to impress it upon him that they need to serve the Lord because of what they had done. And the people promised, we're going to serve the Lord. Now, very quickly, in closing, let me point out one thing to you. So I hope you see that that little statement about choosing good or evil, that wasn't an option. You're told to serve God. But let me point out something else. I've already taken too much of Brother Don's time, but let me point this out. Moses in the scriptures is a picture and a symbol of the law. All right? Who received the law on Mount Sinai, the Ten Commandments? Who was given the law, the ceremonial law, and all of the laws that the nation of Israel had? Moses. You go in the New Testament and read, and every time you read about Moses, it's talking about the law of Moses. Isn't it interesting that the man representing the law did not go into the promised land? You and I, in the New Testament time, are in the promised land. The law is not here. We don't have the law anymore. It did not come into the promised land. Now, if you look at Joshua's commandment, his speech to the people, he repeated all the blessings that God had done unto them and says, because of these, serve the Lord with sincerity and truth. Here we are now in the promised land. You know, I just happened to think Brother George used to call this the promised land, didn't he? When we were building this building here. All right, now, we're in the promised land. In the promised land, can we look back and see any of God's blessings upon us? Well, let's look no further back than the cross of Jesus Christ. Isn't that something to be thankful for? Now, we could talk all day long about God's blessings upon us here in the church, in our lives, and what God has done for us on the cross. And we can say, God has been good to us. He's given us all these things. And what should be our response today? Serve the Lord in sincerity and in truth. And if that seems evil to you, and you want to forsake that, doesn't matter what you choose, it's going to be wrong. Let's serve the Lord in sincerity and in truth, because God is certainly well deserving. May God bless you. Come ahead, Brother.